Hi, it's me, but I'm not Patsy, I'm Bria, filling in at Joy on Paper Radio, the radio show for writers, for those who dream of writing, and for those who want to know the story behind the book. And it's such an honor to be here for a special science fiction themed show. I'm adjusting my mic here and I'm waving at Big Ed saying thank you, Big Ed, for all your help this morning. And I am absolutely so excited. We have New York Times bestselling author Veronica Roth. Many of you listening probably know about the Divergent series, which became a major motion picture. And we are going to be talking to her about her book, Poster Girl. So let's start with the book buzz that I did about Poster Girl so that you can get an idea of what's happening in this book. Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 dystopian, Poster Girl, by Veronica Roth. The novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook with stellar narration by Anna Caputo. Now, let's download the book buzz. What happens after one dystopia falls to another? Prisoner Sonia leads a meager existence in the all-but-forgotten Aperture, where former delegation members are confined but mostly left to fend for themselves. When the Triumvirate offers Sonia her freedom if she can crack the cold case of a missing girl, it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance that she can't pass up. Her ocular implant from the delegation becomes a useful tool for the agent assigned to Sonia, a former friend who betrayed her entire family to the Triumvirate. Outside, the world Sonia once knew is both drastically different and frighteningly familiar. A shell of what it once was under the delegation, yet Sonia's journey exposes many of the faults not only of the current government, but of the former, leading her to question everything she has ever known and believed. Heavy with noir overtones, Poster Girl presents an all-too-plausible future through the eyes of a complex and evolving narrator. Timely and thought-provoking, this Orwellian atmospheric novel gazes unflinchingly at concepts like government overreach, censorship, and what it means to be truly free. Author Veronica Roth's other books include the best-selling Divergent series, the Carve the Mark duology, Chosen Ones, Arch Conspirator, and The End and Other Beginnings. She lives in Chicago, where her hobbies include tennis and pottery. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
So now that you've heard a little bit about Poster Girl, let's invite Veronica onto the show. Veronica, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, I am just so excited to talk to you. I had so much fun reading this book. And I say fun, it's not like a classically fun book, but it is so, so well written and so beautifully lyrical. I couldn't wait to talk to you about it. So let's start off by talking about this world that you've created in Poster Girl. Would you say it's accurate to call it a post-dystopian society? There's kind of a play at words here where we're talking about a girl who kind of lived through one dystopia and then is entering the next one. Is that an accurate representation?
Yeah, I think so. It's the idea of it came sort of from, in my adult work, I've been exploring like aftermath a little bit, like what happens after the story that we usually hear. And this book was a little bit about like me reflecting on, you know, the dystopia I wrote to start my career, and it's a very different world than this book, obviously, but I was curious about, you know, what it would be like to have a regime collapse and to navigate the aftermath of that. And it came together with Sonia because she is on like the wrong side of history, basically. So, you know, how do you write about a character like that and find sympathy for them and also kind of unravel their indoctrination and all that? So that's where Poster Girl's world came about.
Oh, it's so beautifully done. Everything you just described is done so well. It's so compelling. And Sonia's journey. So she essentially begins the story in a prison, quote unquote. It's this place called the Aperture, where the dissidents of, you know, the people that survived the last regime are allowed to live kind of in this gated off area that's very highly, you know, monitored, in the sense people cannot escape, but they also have a lot of autonomy in there. So she's got this place that she's in that's like a prison, and then the impetus for her coming out of there involves a former friend turned enemy, Alexander Price. So will you just talk a little bit about the dynamic of these two characters and what inspired, you know, you talked a little bit just now about Sonia and the drive to write about a character who has this kind of coming out of one thing into another. And then Alexander comes into the picture. Tell the audience a little bit about that dynamic.
Well, I'm going to be really honest with you, which is that I knew this book would have some grim elements to it.
Yeah,
you know, I was
yes.
aware of its yes. thematic, you know, like sadness sort of. And so I was like, I'm going to give myself like a little treat.
Oh, I love that.
And so I developed a kind of like a romance. You know, it's not a huge part of the book, but I just wanted to think about the kind of person who would challenge and be interesting to Sonia. And of course, it's someone from the past. It's like the brother of someone she was basically betrothed to. And there was always like a tension between them, but they never explored it. And then he, of course, betrays her family. And so they have to figure out this kind of angsty, difficult dynamic between them, which isn't to, you know, reduce it to like a series of romance tropes, but I did really enjoy it.
Well, I have to say, it's so effectively done, because the enemies to lovers trope, I had it in my head, like, is this going to be cut? But I kind of was like, no, this is not going to be one of those. And then as the book goes on, it's just these subtle shifts that happen, where the character of Sonia is learning more, not only about Alexander himself, but just about the world as she thought she knew it. And so she starts to soften toward him in these little kind of micro ways. And it's so, so beautifully done. I almost hate to use the word trope, because it can have a negative connotation sometimes, but in this case I feel like you used that trope in the best way you could have in this novel to create that almost like lighthearted, hopeful spin in a very, you're right, there is a lot of grim as we learn about what happened to Sonia's family. That is, you know, she has every reason to hate this guy at the beginning of the book, and as the reader, I sympathized with that with her. So yeah, I mean, and to come at it in that light, that it's a treat for you, I love that. I just love that aspect.
Yeah, I think the serious part of it is that if you're trying to like unravel a bunch of lies that you've been told about the world, you need someone to bear with you in those moments and help you to see the world accurately, right? So he's that for her.
Yes.
And that they develop a romantic bond is the treat.
Right, exactly. And I think that's why it's so satisfying when it does turn romantic, because they walk through a lot of dark things together. And so, mm-hmm. yes, it is like this, you know, this relationship brings that kind of emotional resonance to the reader too. And let's talk a little bit about the society and the tech specifically is what I'm thinking of. In this world, the people have something called an insight. Now, this came from the previous, called the delegation, right? Where mm-hmm. the delegation I was about to say installed. maybe that's the word for it. They installed these into people's eyes. Can you talk a little bit about the insight, what it is, what it does, and why it's kind of a important point in Sonia's, the fact that she has one?
So the insight is basically injected into the eye, like when you're a kid, and your body forms like a sort of symbiotic bond with this piece of technology that then becomes like a surveillance equipment that's like installed in your brain permanently. And this is something that everybody did under the delegation. It was required by law, but it was also like it performs the functions of a smartphone. Like, you can listen to music on it, you can talk to your friends, you can get information about the world around you at, you know, in a moment. So it was supposed to be like a positive piece of technology that is then, of course, used to watch and also sort of behavior control the people in this society. And that's all before. So Sony has one. But, and everyone in the aperture has one, but everyone outside has, like, made this type of technology illegal.
So when she leaves the aperture to go, essentially she goes on a mission with Alexander, and she kind of stands out because she has it.
Yes, it's like a glowing orb, or a glowing circle in her eye. So it's not possible to hide it.
Right, right. And for example, Alexander has what you describe called an illicit, which is kind of, it sounds like the equivalent of a smartphone, but is there more to that?
No, it's exactly a smartphone.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But I just love the clever names, though, because it just, I think the word illicit is so, it's got such deep connotation of, you know, eliciting a response, like a cause and effect type moment with the smartphone. And then she even has this moment when she first sees him where she's like, now why would anybody want to carry that around when it can just be in your head? And that's one of those moments where the characterization of Sonia is so powerful, where the reader understands, okay, this is what she's known her whole life, this is where she's coming from. But as a reader, it and I will say, as a reader who is not looking forward to the day anybody tries to ask me if I want something inserted into my brain, that's just not me, and it's probably never going to be. But that's kind of the interesting dynamic that we see, where she's at, where she's come from, and that's all she's known. Kind of like Alexander, you know, he has the illicit. That's what he knows, and that's his norm. So there's also this tech where there's a character called Myth that she ends up meeting to try to get some information, and he has this like face obscuring tech. So is that at all? Remind me, because I'm trying to remember what is described. Like, does she know about the tech, or she just realizes that's what it is?
You know what? I don't remember if her knowledge of it, like, is from before, but I think my idea, sorry, it's been a moment since I wrote this, but...
That's okay. I just read it, and I'm trying to remember if she just thinks about, like, oh, he has a face-obscuring tech, yeah.
Yes, I think if you have an insight, you know, in your eye, then you have to develop technology to kind of, like, escape its surveillance. So there's a couple of references to, like, different ways to do that in the story.
Yes.
But I don't
yes.
know if she knew about it before or not. It's like an underbelly kind of thing. So
right.
she was very much not the underbelly.
Yes, so. Exactly. In fact, as the title would let us know, she was a poster girl for the delegation, which is, you get the idea, that's one of the reasons that she is able to survive and live in the aperture, because people know who she is. There's a bit more to the story we learn later, but that, you know, she's kind of the quote unquote poster girl for that. Mm-hmm. She's part of the family that does and says the right things. And what an interesting commentary on our current world, even looking at this future world. So talk a little bit, if you would, about your writing journey with this book. Was this one of those books that just was flying off the pen and you just couldn't get it down fast enough? Or was this one of those books that you had to sit with and mull with? And tell us, if you would, a little bit about your writing process.
Well, I was scheduled at that time to write a sequel to Chosen Ones, which is my previous adult novel, my first adult novel. And the pandemic hit the first week, or the lockdown started the first week that Chosen Ones came out. And then subsequently, you know, everything just like went up in flames across the world, you know, just like, you know what? I don't think I can write this book anymore because I don't feel like this person anymore, which is maybe dramatic sounding, but I really mean it. And I had this other idea instead. But I did have to chew on it for a while because I was kind of afraid of it. It's like a darker tone than I'm used to in my work. And so I wasn't sure. I was like, can I do it? Because I think, you know, in order for the book to work, it has to have stronger prose than I was capable of at this or thought that I was capable of at the time. And I was like, you really have to commit to it. It needs to be cut. So I was like afraid of this, the challenge of this book. But I was like, okay, that means you have to write it, because that's always a good sign when you know that a project will really put pressure on you to grow. Mm. That for me means like it's time for this.
Oh, that is so neat to hear. What a beautiful testimony about how a writer, and for those who listen to this show who are writers, not some are readers, some are writers, some are those who dream of writing. So to know that not every book just falls out of you onto your lap. Sometimes
no.
You do, right? Yeah, you do have to sit with it and even work through what story you're trying to tell and how to tell it in the best way. And you mentioned your first adult novel being, was it The Chosen Ones?
Yes.
And so what led you to go from YA, which I imagine many people listening are very familiar with the Divergent series, what led you to go from YA to adult? In terms of the targeted audience?
I think it was really like the ideas I started to have. I was led by them because I was just trying to wrestle with some other things in my life. You know, I think when I was writing YA, I had a lot of thoughts about adolescence and kind of ideas about those characters in that age and how like exhilarating and confusing it is. And then something just started to shift where I became curious about different questions about like how to fit into the world as an adult and how to navigate your sudden responsibility, you know, the duties that you have to like society.
So yeah.
It's not that you can't have those questions or concerns in YA, but they're not as relevant to characters of that age. You know, they're just becoming aware of themselves as an individual. They're not trying to fit themselves into like a network in the same way that you do when you leave college, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that was the drive. You know, it was all creatively driven. I had no career strategy involved at that point.
That's also encouraging to hear for writers.
Yeah,
sometimes
like
there's a little winging it, right?
Yes, I'm helpless against the force of my ideas. I can't be strategic in that way. I admire people who can, but I've got to do the thing.
And I think this book, Poster Girl, I'm going to hold it up for the people watching on my Facebook Live or on the YouTube channel. This book is just, I think, a testament to what you just shared, the wrestling through and the putting your heart out onto this page, because there's a lot of heart in here in the midst of the grim and the dark. And I wanted to ask you a little bit, just in terms of the social media, the landscape that we find ourselves in our current world. I'm not sure what you're, you know, growing up in terms of like what type of books that you liked to read. Did you like to read sci-fi growing up? Did you prefer more different genres? And how did that kind of shape you entering into these types of ideas, talking about a future world where we could almost see the possibilities from our current world is kind of where I'm going with that. Talk a little bit about your background there.
Yeah, so I read almost exclusively science fiction fantasy as a child.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, it has an undeniable influence on what I'm interested in now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, mostly it was for the escapist part of it. I was a very anxious and moody child, and so reading science fiction and fantasy was a way to just like have some relief, you know, from like what was kind of like a difficult internal environment. And it's become more than that now, you know. It's like I think one of the reasons I enjoy science fiction and fantasy so much is that they ask my brain to stretch in new ways and to consider new ideas. And also dystopia specifically asks us to examine the things around us in like an exaggerated form, which in this case is of course like the kind of surveillance that we're all currently under, you know, because of our
right.
smartphones, like it knows where you are. The New York Times did this huge expose a couple of years ago, which partly inspired Poster Girl, which just kind of revealed how much you can find out about a person based on where they go.
Mm.
Like, you can find their identity. It's not that hard, apparently, according to this article. And I just found that to be so troubling. And I think that's really, like, where the book came from. But it's always stuff like that for me. I love thinking about, you know, where we could go, and maybe not like realistically where we will go, but just kind of like the kind of ethical and moral implications of like what we've decided to do now, if we blow them up a little bit.
Yes. Yes. I think that's perfectly worded, because in your book, as I read through it, I was thinking about, okay, this is not so far off from what could happen if, and it's that what if. I mean, that's often the question most writers ask themselves, whether they're writing mystery or whatever genre.
Yeah.
But the what if, I think for science fiction writers like yourself, tends to be like, where are we going in this world? Like, where is it headed? And I think this book is a wonderful examination of what that could be. And there's this, also there is this kind of mystery noir element, because she's on a mission to find this missing girl. So there's wonderful collaboration that you do with different genres tied in under that science fiction umbrella. And was that something that kind of just came organically as you were writing the story, or were you trying to be really purposeful about infusing that type of feel into the book?
The noir part of it happened very much by accident. Mm. I think just because I honestly think it's just raining a lot in Seattle. I was just like, ooh, okay, let's have her be this kind of like cynical detective figure, you know, with like a dark past, which is very much, you know, kind of feels like a noir archetype that exists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You don't usually see it applied to a young woman like this, but. So that was my accident. The mystery was on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that writing this story meant I would have to write a mystery, which I haven't done before.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, writing a mystery is really hard.
Yes.
Because you have to know so much more than your reader or your character knows at any given moment. And it was tricky. But I do have a friend, Kara Thomas, who writes amazing mysteries. And she was very helpful in, you know, the beta reading part of this project.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, now tell me, how much, in terms of outlining ahead of time and having your notes about, okay, oh, this character, when they show up on the scene, I, the author, know that down on page, you know, 500, they're going to, yeah. So how much of that was ahead of the actual writing?
I think I had to know all of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was, probably the most outlined book that I've ever written, and it, coincidentally also the shortest, so I don't know, maybe not so coincidental. But I did always like have to figure out, you know, in this moment, like, what does she know, or what does she think she knows, and, you know, what's really going on. And that was like, it's like having two outlines at once, so it was really fun. I mean, I say it's hard, but I love, you know, I love when things are hard in writing, so it was pretty delightful at the same time.
Mm, and it made for a great book. So as I'm looking at your website, it looks like, so I have the hardcover copy of Poster Girl, and I also got to listen to the audiobook. It looks like it's
awesome.
Now in paperback as well?
That's right. It came out in paperback on Tuesday.
Oh, awesome. So that's really exciting for the readers to know it's available in pretty much every format that you could imagine now, including paperback. When I've done this show before, I've asked authors if they listen to their own book, like to the audio of their own book. And I'm curious, have you listened to the audio of this book?
I've listened to enough of it to know that Anna Caputo rocks.
She did excellent. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's a little too soon for me to listen to it. So eventually I will listen to it, because I'll kind of forget a lot about the book and I'll maybe want to experience it again. And when someone reads it to you in an audiobook, it's like you're discovering it in a new way. So
oh, right.
I always love, a couple of years from now, I will be delighted to listen to the whole thing.
Well, I always find the answers fascinating. I want to say it was... Oh, was it Edward Ashton? He's the author of Mickey 7, if you're familiar at all with him.
Yeah.
I think it was him I had on the show who was saying he does not listen to his own audio. He doesn't want to. And I'm like, that is fascinating to me, because I'm not sure why, but it just is that this is something. Now, what you just said, though, kind of tips me off a little bit, because it's its own medium in many ways, because this person is essentially taking on your novel and putting it into their voice. So that includes, mm-hmm. I wrote this sentence that way, but here's how they said that sentence. Interesting. So it's like what you just said is you're going to discover your own book through someone else's eyes. And I just love that, that idea.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to enough audiobooks, you can really tell the difference between someone who's an excellent performer and someone who's maybe, you know, less experienced or not as skilled. And they can make a huge difference in terms of whether you like the story or not.
Yes, so, yes, absolutely, yes.
They change a lot, you know.
And so what would you like to share what's coming up for you? We have this as a standalone novel, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and anything coming out that you want to let the audience know about?
Yeah, so after Poster Girl, I had a novella come out called Arch Conspirator, which is a sci-fi retelling of the Greek tragedy Antigone. And I have another novella coming out next May called When Among Crows, which is Polish fantasy inspired. So
Ooh.
That's what I got.
That is fascinating. Oh, I'm so excited about those. And so where can they find you online?
I am at veronicarothbooks.com, and I'm also active on Instagram at Veronica Roth.
Awesome. Well, Veronica, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for your time, for sharing just all that you've, you know, brought to the to this interview in terms of a very seasoned and well-known author. It's great to hear a little bit more behind the book. So I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks so much. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, well, thank you, listeners, for joining us for this wonderful show. Oh, it was so... What an amazing woman, Veronica Roth. I just loved talking to her. And when you hear how she comes up with her story of Poster Girl, it's such an emotional read. Just keep that in mind, readers, that when you go through it, there is some dark, but there's also a lot of light that comes out of it. And I just can tell she put her heart into it. So do make sure you get your hands on either the brand new paperback that's out or on the Audible or the hardcover. And be sure to check her out. So thank you all for listening, and Patsy will be back Tuesday at 11 a.m. for her next Joy on Paper. I hope you all have a wonderful day, and those in Clearwater, Florida, where we are here in the studio, I believe there's a little bit of rain out there, so be careful on the roads, and make sure if you're a writer that you're out there writing. If you're a reader, enjoy your next book. Take care. Bye-bye now.